This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Welcome back to the second hour of Food for Thought with Carol. And joining me is Jeannie Lester. We are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region, as well as streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And anytime during the show, you can give us a call at 866-823-1077. We'd love to hear of a new place that may be opening up, or a new place you've eaten at, or a recipe you'd like to share, or if you just want to chat with us. Again, the number is 866-823-1077. We'd also like to welcome our live audience here to the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester. We're at 814 Elm Street. Come on down. You still have plenty of time to have lunch at Midtown Cafe, and you can come and watch the show. Also, I'd love for you to go to Facebook, and you can go to Food for Thought with Carol and like us so you can connect with us. So welcome back.
Yes.
Here we are.
We are. You know, Carol, you have so much going on, and you know, you do this radio show. You also obviously are very involved in the diner, and you've been in and around the restaurant business, I think, all your life.
since I was 10 years old, nine years old. Yeah.
Okay. So one of the shows, and I realize TV is not real, but one of the quote unquote reality shows I kind of get sucked into,
of course,
is Gordon Ramsay. Goes into these restaurants and
he scares me.
He does, but I love him. Like I am just so compelled to watch him.
Really?
And I just adore him. Okay. I don't think I'd want to be on the receiving end. I would not want to be the restaurant owner. But somebody there always has invited him in theory.
Are you talking about Gordon Ramsay or Robert Irvine?
No, Gordon Ramsay.
Okay.
Ramsay. So he'll go in and kind of find out. So he first comes in, he sits down at their little table, tries a few of their dishes, spits them all out, tells the chef
this is
to
Restaurant
bring it
Impossible,
back.
Right?
I've forgotten the name of the show, but it's very much like probably the one you're thinking of. It's the same basic format because I know there's another guy who's coming out.
Kitchen Nightmares.
Doing the same thing. Kitchen Nightmares. I was going to say, is
Bob
it Hell's Kitchen?
Yeah,
it's Kitchen Nightmares.
Here. Okay. I didn't realize because I love Robert Irvine.
Okay. And I think he does a similar thing, right? It's the same basic formula.
Okay.
So Gordon goes in and he spits out their food, tells them how awful they are, and then he'll try to uncover where things are going wrong, whether it's the management structure, whether things are going wrong in the kitchen. And it really kind of gives you a glimpse, and I'm not sure how real this is, as to the dynamics between all the folks that are working in the kitchen and then the hierarchies that there are in a kitchen. Because unless you know that and unless you've been around that all your life, you just kind of are oblivious and you think everybody's there working the same position and they just all mass produce this food and send it on out. What kind of a hierarchy or interplay is there in the kitchen as far as really getting things to work well? And probably you've seen when things maybe, or how important it is that there be a symbiotic relationship between all of those elements and everybody knows their exact job.
It is extremely important. And, you know, with those TV shows, and I like the mirror one, that I like Restaurant Impossible because, Gordon Ramsay, like I said, he just scares me. But
I like
Irvine,
his accent.
it's pretty much the same premise. But, a lot of those restaurants that they go into, they're like a lot of them, and I'm not sure about Kitchen Nightmares, but they seem to be, with Restaurant Impossible, mom-and-pop places. Is that kind of the
very
same?
Very often family-owned.
Family-owned.
Yep. And trying to be upscale, but family-owned, yes.
So really, a lot of those places, I don't think that they have, like, the head chef and the kitchen manager and then the prep person. And, I think those, and depending on how big that they are, they may only have one person on the line, depending on how large the restaurant is, or, a lot of things depend on it. If you look at like the Red Arrow, okay, let's take a look at Londonderry that we just opened.
Yes.
I mean, we do seat 68 there.
Okay.
Although Milford, we seat it's 72. So it's, pretty much similar. And Manchester, we only see 36, although Manchester's volume is a little bit.
Probably.
Well, actually, Londonderry has started with more than Manchester. But anyway, let's talk about Londonderry. We'll just talk about Londonderry.
Okay.
So definitely in that situation, I mean, we definitely have a structure. You know, we have a general manager.
Okay.
I mean, first and foremost, I have a director of operation that runs all three of my restaurants, the diners. And then in each location, we have a general manager. So take Londonderry, we have Dave, who is the general manager, and he overlooks everything.
Okay.
And mainly the kitchen, I have to say, although he is in charge of both. So if anything happens front or back, it's on Dave's back. And then there, you know, and then of course we have the front end manager, who's Rob. But going back to the kitchen, then there's the kitchen manager. And there's usually a kitchen manager on each shift, because of course the Red Arrow is open 24 hours, so there's three shifts.
Okay.
So there's a kitchen manager on each shift.
Sure.
And then below that, there's line cooks. And then below that, there's prep cooks.
Okay.
Sometimes the line cooks do both, you know. But Londonderry is pretty big, and it's, you know, I mean, we've been there not even 2 weeks, and the business, the volume has been quite a bit. So we're looking that, you know, it looks like we're going to need, like, separate prep people. And, you know, and the drive through hasn't even opened yet. So that's
right.
Like a, we haven't even thought about that. I'm actually there today for a pretty big meeting with the higher-ups, and we'll be discussing that. So yeah, am I answering your question?
Yeah, you are. It's the tiering is fascinating to me. And I would think that would be super important, because one of the things that leaps out to me when I watch these shows is the details that have to be right.
They
and I know that you are the same way, because you will ask about certain details and get very concerned if there is a detail that you feel may not be up to what your standards are. And it and again, going back to the show I watched with Gordon Ramsay,
yep.
He'll watch the plating of the food.
Of course.
And if it's sloppy, if it hasn't been cleaned off.
Wipe it.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That is just unacceptable. And you think about all the menu items that there are and the number of chefs and cooks that are in the kitchen, and the combination of food orders that you'd be getting in there, it seems like it would be very easy to get overwhelmed. And then you've got time, because that's the other thing he's harping on. This has been too long.
Of course.
You cannot let these
ticket
people wait that
long. Ticket times have to be a certain amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at the diner, I mean, I know at our diner, we have manuals. They're, you know, so thick. And listeners, I'm talking probably like, you know, 6 inches thick. I mean, you know, we have several of them.
Yeah.
And they all have pictures of every single item on the menu.
Yeah.
There's pictures and exactly how they're prepared, what plate to use.
Nice.
And, you know, what they're supposed to look like. So,
okay.
You know, everybody on the line has all their job. You know, mm-hmm. There's the fry one, there's the grill, and then there's the one that puts the plate together. And then on the other side of the window,
mm-hmm.
Receiving the food where Gordon Ramsay is usually looking, that's called the expediter.
Okay.
They expedite the food. So they are watching all the food that before it gets to the customer to make
yeah.
sure that everything is perfect before it goes out.
So just what you've described is fascinating mm-hmm. because you think of all the steps
and then,
that have to be in place. Yes.
Then you have me sitting
uh-oh.
At the counter when
yes.
I'm there.
Yes. Which is good because the owner needs to be out there and seeing what's going on,
yes.
right? And talking
yes.
with your customers.
Yes.
Because that's the other thing they yell at owners about that are not doing that, that they're
yes.
you're not out here. You haven't talked to any of your customers, that
yes.
kind of thing.
Because I do have to say there, you know, the expediter at the diner is usually Rob or Dave.
Okay.
And you know, their job also is to go around to most of the tables
yes.
to introduce themselves, and especially because we're new at this point, but I like that most of the time anyway, to introduce
yeah.
themselves, make sure everything's okay. So, you know, as they're mingling around, you know, sometimes food comes out, but the wait staff is also trained to make sure that, you know, if something doesn't look right, that they are able to communicate with the kitchen
mm-hmm.
to say, this isn't right. And
good.
What happens a lot of times, and it has happened, I'm not going to say it doesn't happen, it's not supposed to happen. When you say to the cook,
yeah.
I need another egg, he'll go, I'm not giving you another egg. And then they
right.
fight and, you know, it's just big
that's
thing.
What I was wondering.
Oh,
are
yes.
they empowered? Is the waitstaff empowered to go back and give that kind of feedback to the kitchen?
They are supposed to be able to do that.
Yeah. Okay.
And the kitchen is supposed to recognize that that is not correct
yes.
and they're supposed to take it and fix it.
Right.
That doesn't happen like that all the time, like I said, but
sure.
that is ideally what is supposed to happen.
Okay. That's the prescription.
So that,
yeah.
is,
uh-huh.
that is. So
it is. It's all very interesting. And when you even just think about, because you don't think about it. The plate comes out to the table if you're a customer and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, everything looks good. It looks like it's supposed to, and you eat. But you think about how that how important the presentation is. And it's funny because now I have started, and it sounds kind of silly, but we used to, instead of setting the table for my own family and then putting a pot or two on the table that everybody shovels from, I've started plating my food. And I have white plates because it's supposed to be a simple, elegant background so that it doesn't fight what your food is looking like. And I put the food out and try to make it look kind of nice because then they think it's going to taste even better than it probably does.
No, that is real taking pride in what you're putting on the table. That's very important. Yeah.
Yes. And then there's a side benefit. You don't have as much of a mess. It seems somehow less messy to do that because you've just got this one plate that's going out on the table. You're not shuffling everything out and putting it in a serving dish and then having to clear the serving dish and blah, blah, blah.
You know, when I cook at home, I'm like so bad. Listeners, you all know I'm not a messy cook. I'm a clean cook. And as I cook, I like to do as many pots and pans, get them done before I sit down to dinner. Cause I don't like to sit and Daryl's really good. I mean, if I cook, he'll do the dishes and vice versa. We help each other, you know, so it's not really a big deal, but you know, before I sit down, if I can get those pots done and, you know, on the plate, you know, if he's like not sitting at the table, I'll sit there, I'll take the pot, go to the sink and shh. And he's like, sit down. I'm like, yeah, just a second. Shh.
Because you don't want to look at it through dinner and you don't want to have to face it after dinner. You're supposed to be relaxing, enjoying that time that you just, you know, had a nice dinner.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you.
So the Londonderry crew today is, I'm sure, awaiting my
arrival. I know. That's the other thing I was thinking. I'm like, so who's the lookout? Now we have the expediter, we have the chef, the line cook, the prep cook. We have the lookout.
They have
Carol's car
Carol
has entered
I'm
the
sure
parking lot.
That they do. And you know, I hope that they feel, you know, when I go and the first thing when I sit down with them, I always say, and especially it's brand new, and they want to please, and they are all doing a fantastic job. And I start always, you know, I try to, with my meetings with them, you know, I think it's always important. My dad always taught me this. You know, you start with positive and you get a critique. And I tell them, listen, don't take this to heart. We're talking, we're critiquing because it's making, you know, it's making it better, which in turn is going to make it better for you.
Right.
You know, it makes it better for all of us,
you
know, and then you end with positive. So, you know, it just makes it all nice and cohesive and makes everybody happy. And, you know, so I would hope to think that they don't think of me like that, but they probably do.
I'm sure they don't think of you in a like fearful, negative way, but there's always that little bit of, okay, if the owner's coming.
I'm sure. Well, in Milford.
Straighten your tie and, you know.
In Milford a few years ago, there was a code word when I showed up.
Oh, no.
I don't even remember what it was,
goodness.
They had a code word that they all said.
Oh, that's funny.
When they saw me pull up in the Oval.
I was going to say that's funny. Is it funny? Sort of funny. You're sort of smiling.
It was okay
at
the time.
Yeah.
It was
not loving it.
But anyway.
Important to be there and be involved.
It is very important.
All right. So then final question before we go on break. If Gordon were to walk into Londonderry, what is the one thing you know he's just going to be bowled over by? He's going to be like, oh, Carol, you nailed it. And I'm thinking of so many things. Not only when I saw the granite countertops that are a beautiful red, like where else do you see red granite countertops?
And all three diners are going to be like that.
That's gorgeous.
Which I cannot wait for that to happen. But,
if you look at all of the elements, the atmosphere, you've kept it cohesive. It's diner design. I mean, it's within the theme that you want it to be. It's, you know, and then the food, there are the food favorites that people love and they love the way it tastes. And your staff has been well trained. You've got all of those
staff
elements.
Needs a little tweaking in Londonderry.
Okay.
It's on my list today. They do. So, you know, he would probably come in if he came in like now. You know, we definitely have some working to do on the training of the staff a little bit. But overall, you know, they're good.
Yep.
And, you know, I do think like the design of the diner, I think definitely you walk in and it's just a wow. It really is. And the food. I mean, our menu is great. Mm-hmm. The menu can be served 24/7.
Yep.
You know, I think that we know what we're doing. We're, you know, it's our third location and, you know, so.
All right. One more question then.
Yeah.
Unsung hero. Think about maybe your prep guys, or who's the unsung hero
of
the diner?
Probably two in the diner, I would say, would be the prep cook, who is way in the back.
Yeah.
And, you know, that prep cook is so important because, you know, if he doesn't do his prep, you can't, you know, especially when you're so busy the way that Londonderry is right now. And, you know, in all the diners. I mean, the prep cook in any of the diners is extremely busy. The prep cook and the dishwasher, you know, they're sure. unsung
in
heroes.
Any restaurant. I mean, that's a restaurant. For any restaurant.
Any restaurant. I
nice.
Think so. Yeah.
Good job.
Here we go. Are we ready to go to break?
I do believe so, because I am so excited for what's coming up next.
I am too. We have Amy.
Amy Antonucci. Yes, who is a beekeeper. We're so excited we're talking over each other. Go.
No, you go. You go.
We are so excited because we are going to be talking with Amy Antonucci all about beekeeping. You know, we had talked briefly about beekeeping a couple weeks ago, and then because we knew very little about it, we had all these silly pictures in our head about how you get honey that's just from these bees and how you get honey that's just from these flowers. And I had, you know, these comical pictures of lining up the bees and having them stay within little corrals. But there has to be a real science and a real way to make this successful. And we're going to find out when we talk to Amy right after the break. We'll be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. We are live at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester at 814 Elm Street. You still have plenty of time to come down and have lunch. Midtown Cafe, you can come and watch the show. And we have a great guest here right now. We have Amy, who is a beekeeper, and I'm just so excited to hear more about beekeeping. And I just want to remind people, too, the telephone number to call, 866-823-1077. So, Amy, you know, listeners, yeah. It's radio. So, you know, for the ones that are here that are watching, but there's listeners that are obviously are listening. She even came in full outfit.
Yes.
Which is so cool.
Well, I have my veil down so I can actually use the mic. But, yes, I'm wearing the beekeeper's official outfit.
It is so cool. And she has this beautiful, vibrant, I mean, like you said, the star of the show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it is the bee.
And worker
I mean,
bee.
You know, in the way that you do that, you do it so... Doesn't she do it so lovingly?
Like, you know, she I does. Mean, I know.
I right? love my bees.
You do. And so let's talk about, I mean, I'm not quite, where should we start? What do you think we should start with? I mean, like the basics of beekeeping, like for someone like myself and my boyfriend, Daryl, we would love to start this. So how does one start to be a beekeeper?
Well, actually, what I recommend as the way to start being a beekeeper is, first of all, to take some classes. And New Hampshire has a whole host of little clubs. There's the overall one is New Hampshire Beekeepers Association. And then I'm part of the Seacoast Club. There's the Pawtuckaway Club. There's a Concord, I think they call themselves the Capital Beekeeper, something like that. But all of them offer courses, bee schools, they're often called.
Bee schools.
Yeah. And the way you all found me was I was teaching a class in beekeeping at Canterbury Shaker Village.
Yes.
So I also actually, in the winters, teach one at my house about through a permaculture group. So there are all over the state and beyond that classes that you can take that will really help you start to understand honeybee biology, what's needed to be a beekeeper, management, the whole, you know, world of diseases that plague honeybees that is newer than, well, it's about 30 years that we've been struggling with those. But I find that people tend to be more successful and stick with it if they get some education, talk to some other beekeepers, you know, get some help getting into it.
Go ahead.
So I'm wondering, even just starting at the very beginning, okay, bees. We all think we know what a bee is. There have to be many varieties of bees. How do you get bees? I mean, do you send away for bees?
In yes.
The you do send away for them in the mail. That's fascinating. So you don't just run outside like a little kid and try to get some in a jar and stick them in a...
Oh,
so it's much more elaborate than that.
Well,
clearly.
But did you really think that?
No. But where would you have gone to get the bees?
I mean, I do find it fascinating that you do send out for bees.
Yeah, it is.
But I didn't think imagine we went being out the post- jar.
Well, being a little dramatic
you,
for
and I'm just giving it back effect. To you.
Well, first of all, even when you say bee, that isn't specific accurate? Enough because there are actually 16,000 species of bees.
Wow.
And we're talking about one. The honeybee is Apis mellifera. That is her scientific name.
Her. Okay.
Well, him too. That's okay. A good point. They're mostly female. We can talk about that. So, and we're looking at a her right now. So that's a girl. So of the bees, you're actually looking for this one very specific kind that live in these intense social structures and have the ability to make honey, which most of these other ones are, you know, they pollinate, they do other solitary bees, and they do all sorts of awesome things. They're so cool. But they don't make honey.
Oh,
not around here,
so
at least.
So just the honeybee.
There are, I believe they found 9 species of bee around the world that make some amount of honey. This continent only has one other, the stingless bee, which is way south of the U.S., and it makes, like, it's a tiny little bee, and it makes, like, a quart a year or something. Unlike the honeybee, which, you know, I can pull off some years 100 pounds of honey from one hive.
Wow.
So they are really wonderful for these amazing gifts they give us. So anyway, but the way to get these honeybees, it used to be back when bees were doing better, and pollinators in general, that you really would wait like for a swarm to land in a tree and to catch it. You wouldn't
All right.
get,
so do you want to walk back that criticism,
I do,
Carol?
And I apologize.
Now, a jar isn't quite, because even a swarm of bees is going to be about 10,000 bees.
Wow.
And you have to have a bee. One bee alone is not really a thing. A bee is more of a superorganism. You have to have a queen. You have to have the workers. You have to have the whole system, or it's not a viable entity. One bee alone will be dead in a couple of days. That's just not real. That I'm not quite getting the right, but I think you know what
yeah.
I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So, but nowadays there are less wild bees. There are less opportunities to catch swarms. So most of us are ordering our bees. Now there are a lot of folks within a couple hours of me, there's about 5 people who take a big truck, rent some kind of big truck, go south, load up with packages of bees and drive them back. So they don't literally come in the mail because it is very expensive to ship bees.
Okay.
Because if you were at the post office, would you want bees coming through? No. So they charge a lot to do that.
Sure.
So there's a whole kind of side business that some beekeepers take up of going and bringing back, and we all in the area buy from them. But yeah, they come usually in like this box with a lot of wire mesh. And there's a queen in a cage, and there's a candy syrup container, and you have to hive them. There are also nucleus hives, which are like mini hives that are already kind of going, and you can get those. They're usually a little more expensive and harder to find. But those are your two real sure options. I mean, catching swarms is great, but it's not an easy way to start, to be honest, people.
Sure.
To be honest. Yes.
Boom, boom. So then, so let's say we've got the right kind of bee, you've got the bees shipped in, you've got that all set to go. What are we thinking as far as seasons? I mean, there has to be, what happens during the winter, spring, summer? I mean, what
where
do the seasons do?
Yeah.
Right now?
Are they sleeping?
It's not really sleeping. They are clustering.
She tucked them in.
Yeah, little blankets. I wish I could. Oh, gosh.
Sure.
I mean, the winters are the hardest for bees around here, and we tend to lose 40 to 50% of our hives every winter right now, which is not great. It's sort of when they're in the hive, they're in there for, you know, months, and any kind of disease process that has started is going to run rampant when they're just stuck inside. It's kind of, you know, this is not true for all of us, right?
Sure.
Winter is
sure.
when we're all indoors spreading germs with each other. So this is the difficulty for them in the winters.
Now, okay, so these hives are, they're like out in your yard.
Yes.
I mean, and I, you know, honestly, I can't even, not that I don't know what a beehive looks like, but you can't bring that like in or
no.
in the garage or?
Well, there are downsides to that. Okay, so want me to walk you through kind of a year of a beehive?
Yes. Sure.
I'll do it short and sweet.
Sure.
Sweet, right? That. Okay. So in the spring, You either get a package or you have an overwintered hive and it's small, and then the queen starts laying eggs and it gets big. So it's going to go from, I don't know, maybe 10,000 bees to 50, 60, 70,000.
Back up. Oh. You get your package.
Yeah.
Where do you put it?
You have to have a hive. Now, there are different varieties of hives, but the most popular is the Langstroth hive, which you've probably seen. It's like boxes. It's almost like someone has said, people have said to me, do you have filing cabinets in your yard? You know, that's kind of what it looks like. Okay. And they go up tall. And
so you purchase these.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Or,
well,
so you have them
some
already.
People can, you okay, can, but, if you're really handy, you can make stuff yourself. But okay. Yeah, so you get this all
you have
together.
It all ready. Then you get your bees in the
get
box
your bees
and then you put them in.
And you shake them in, literally, like
in your outfit.
Wow.
In your outfit, I would recommend that. Yes, put your veil up for that. They're relatively docile at that point, honestly, because they don't have a place. Bees are defensive stingers, and they don't, if they don't have a home, they're not that interested in stinging. But then again, you can annoy them enough that they
right.
will. Yeah.
Right.
So always okay. best. So yeah, so you shake your bees in, you put your little queen in a cage, they let her out, she starts doing her thing, she lays eggs. She can lay up to 2,000 eggs a day.
Wow. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So the population will just get huge and get, you know, honey, hopefully, cross your fingers, and grow in size. And part of your job is to keep giving them more boxes to use. And around August, things shift a little bit. That's kind of between the light changing. Mostly the light changing puts them in sort of a different mode. They keep gathering, but they're also putting more into the next generation of bees that has to live through the winter. And as they get into fall, they start downsizing their population. They form, like they create an area that's empty in the hive. It still has the comb, but they take out, there's no brood. That's the baby bees developing. There's no honey. It's just an empty space where they can get into the cells and make a cluster.
So at this point, honey is all gone.
No.
Okay.
The honey is above.
Okay.
And you always have to leave enough for them because honey is what they winter over on.
Okay.
As the winter comes, the queen goes in the middle. She's most important, so she's most protected. All the worker bees go around her, and they vibrate their wing muscles in order to make heat. And to power that, they eat honey.
Oh.
And they can actually, they'll keep it, depending on what's going on in the hive, they'll keep the temperatures up 60, 70, but even up to 90 degrees once they start brood rearing.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
They can, within the cluster, they can stay that warm.
So this is the fall.
This is the winter now, actually.
Okay, we're in the winter now.
Yeah, so they're prepping for that in the fall, and once we get to the winter, they do that ball, wing,
the
quiver,
wing. Okay.
Eat honey.
And then they stay like that through the winter.
They move up and around the hive to eat the honey, so they follow kind of the honey. Up.
And they all stay in this little ball
yeah.
with the queen in the middle, and they yeah. just kind of move. And
now, rewinding even just a little bit, mm-hmm. You had said, hopefully, there's honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there's not, what are some of the reasons for that?
Right. Essentially, if they can't get out to gather enough nectar, they can't make much honey. And there are a number of things that can lead to that. If we have a drought, flowers aren't going to have the resources, fluid mm-hmm. to make nectar. So we've had a number of droughts the past few years, and that meant really very little honey production. Some years, if it is too rainy, they can't get out to gather
right.
the nectar. So there are things like that that can happen. That, you know, it's like any other sort of agriculture. The weather is ruling, really, how it goes.
Don't think of it like that.
That's right.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You know, we're going to go on a short break.
Mm-hmm.
And we are in studio with Amy, who is a beekeeper, and we're learning all kinds of things. And stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Bit of a... Yep.
Welcome back to Food for Thought, live at the Beacon Building, downtown Manchester. You can give us a call, 866-823-1077, if you have any beekeeping questions for Amy. So let's continue our conversation, which Jeannie and I are just I think we're flabbergasted, really. I just find this so fascinating. It, you know, and again, what an education we get. I just, it's very interesting. So I think we were in winter.
Yeah. Well, you had asked, why can't you just bring them inside? And there are a few reasons for that. One is, if you bring them inside where it's warm, they will think it's summer and they will fly out.
Oh, that would be bad. That totally makes sense.
So that's not what you want. And also, if they get warm enough, their metabolism actually goes up. There's sort of a, they want to be in a sort of low-key state to manage to get, not over consume and run out of honey.
Okay.
So, and also, they depend on leaving the hive every 6 to 8 weeks. You know how we usually get a January thaw? We didn't really get it this year.
Right.
They need that because bees are fastidious, and they will not eliminate in the hive. They will hold it, and they can do that safely for about 6 weeks, and then they have to leave the hive to do their business. I'm being careful on the radio.
Yes.
And then they come back, you know. And yeah. But so without that opportunity, they would die.
Wow.
They get a sort of that's dysentery that will kill them. So they need to be somewhere that they can leave periodically and do that elimination thing. And I don't think you want that in your living room.
No, probably not.
I wasn't thinking the living room. I was thinking the garage.
Well, and some people do build sort of structures to give them some amount of, but you're just always really, there's the going through the winter here has some, you know, there's no way to make it that they can leave and go forage.
Well, it sounds like at that point it sounds like you're fighting nature that way.
Right.
I mean, you got to just kind of leave them and let them do their thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and they can. It's definitely possible. So
now when you say okay, because when we were at break, and we shouldn't have done that on break, but like you had said, right now for someone that wants to start beekeeping for like. You know, because to me at first I was thinking, well, wow, this is the perfect time to start beekeeping. It's spring. There, you know, we can get some bees and just start it. But you said, let's start
it's
with.
It's a bit late
right,
for that because there's a shortage of honeybees in the country, and you really need to put your order in more like the January, February time. I mean, it might be possible to find someone who hasn't sold out yet, but it's getting really sketchy by now. Where are we, March? Yeah, it's getting late to do that. And it's really nice, frankly, to have the winter to buy the equipment and assemble it. Usually it comes unassembled, so you have to do some amount of work to really be prepared. I mean, we'll see. It's very weather dependent. My packages of bees are supposed to be here, I think, April 15th. So
you have to have everything ready for when they come.
Yeah.
Now, what about the bees that you have out there now?
Yeah.
I mean, what happens to them? What, just every year you order new bees?
Well, I tend to order a couple packages as a backup.
Is that just because you're a crazy beekeeper?
No, it's because so many die.
Okay.
So I went. I had also downsized a bit.
I don't mean that bad either.
No.
Crazy.
Oh no. Oh, I didn't take that badly. Okay. I'm happy for that. But there's actually, sadly, it's not
it.
That.
I think it's so cool.
Yeah. It's and I had downsized a bit, and I'm looking to get a few more going. So, but usually, again, if you're losing 50% of them. You need a way to be building back up.
But now when you order the bees, do you always have to order a queen bee?
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to have separate ones then. Because
there
can only be one queen bee in the honeycomb.
Yeah, in the hive. Yeah.
In the hive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They make the honeycomb.
Right, they do.
Okay.
She's on.
They make it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how much interaction do you have, you know, as we think about looking at your suit and the protection that you need to have, how much interaction do you have with the hive, with the bees, that you need to don that suit and be prepared?
I try to go in to inspect every 2 to 3 weeks in the warm season, meaning it has to really be over 70 degrees to do a real inspection. So, you know, I'll poke around another time. In fact, about a week ago, I went and poked around to see how they were doing, and I could crack it and look, are they alive, essentially, is what you're seeing at that. And does it look like there's still honey left and things like that.
Okay.
So, but a real inspection where you kind of take it apart and look at every comb and do that, it needs to be pretty warm for that. So usually it's like May, June, July, August, September. Sometimes you get one in October.
So, and then talk to us about retrieving the honey.
Mm.
How, that has to be more involved because you mentioned leaving enough honey for
them. Yeah,
yeah. So what's the science behind retrieving the honey? How,
right.
How do you go about that?
Well,
and how much do you need to leave?
You have to leave them about 75 pounds for our climate.
75 pounds?
Yep.
Wow.
It, honey's pretty heavy. That it's,
right.
And they make a lot
okay.
if they can. So they usually...
Where does it go?
What do you mean?
In the honeycomb?
Yeah, they pack it into the honeycombs. It's see if it weren't radio. I feel like I'm cheating to show you a picture because then the other people don't get to. Yeah, everything happens in the comb. They build these combs, and that is where she lays eggs, and the babies hatch. That's where they put the pollen, which is their protein source. That's where they put the nectar, which they make into honey. Everything happens in the comb. Yeah, and. Essentially, in the fall, you kind of go through and you say, all right, how much do we have here? And you learn like a medium super. I know that means like nothing to you. But one of the medium-sized boxes is about 30 pounds of honey. So I like to leave them three of those to be safe. And anything over that, anything more than that, I can pull.
So, and when you're pulling it, are you coming out with a big bucket, and then do you have to boil it down? Do you
anything
to it? It's not like sap.
It's that hard. The bees do the dehydrating for you.
Okay.
They bring in nectar, which is about, 70%, 80%, depending on the flower, 70 to 80% water, and they dehydrate it down to 17% water.
Wow.
So, yeah, they do all that for you.
Okay.
But what you do is essentially, so I'll go through and I'll see, okay, they've made five supers. I'm going to take two. I take the pick the two that I want, and I put what's called a triangle escape board on top of the hive. I put the supers I want on top of that. I close it up, and in 36 hours, they can get out, but it takes them a while to figure out how to get back in.
Okay.
It's this wild scientific thing. That I can't really, like, the science of it escapes me a bit. But it has to do, they go right and up before they'll go down and left, or something like that. So then you come back, and they're pretty much free of bees, and you just bring them inside. And then there's a process of using some kind of tool to uncap, take the wax off the top. And I have an extractor which spins them around and uses centrifugal force to fling it out of the comb. That way I still have the comb to give back to them. They don't have to rebuild comb every year.
Nice.
Which is really helpful for them and means you'll get more honey because it's metabolically expensive for them to make comb. And then my extractor has like a spigot at the bottom and I put it in jars and there we go.
And so there's nothing else you need to do to that jar of honey. It's just ready
no,
to consume.
No, I mean, you know, there's some places will do things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I tend to use like a strainer, like, you know, a kitchen kind of strainer, you
sure.
know, which just gets out like dead bees and,
yeah.
you know, weird
nice,
stuff.
Yeah.
That now
what
and then.
What is that crunch?
Right. It doesn't. I mean,
it's honey marmalade.
It's definitely au naturel.
Yes. Very, very.
Very authentic.
It is au naturel.
Sometimes a lot of people heat the big producers will heat the whole, all the equipment to make it run through their tubes and things faster.
Okay.
I have no need to do that. So I just, it's raw, you know, that's where the, you'll see in the stores raw honey or
right.
not. So, in a small scale, there's absolutely no reason to do anything but put it through a strainer to get out the bees' legs and put it in jars, and there you go.
Are there different grades then of honey? I mean, again, I'm just thinking,
maple
I know it's
syrup.
Not like maple syrup, but in that same mm-hmm. vein, I mean, because you can buy, you know, this is clover honey, this is blah,
yeah,
blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
Are there different, you know, or are those just different varieties?
They're called varietals. Grade, essentially, if there aren't bees dead in it, it's grade A.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
if you manage to get out the nasty stuff, it's grade A.
Okay.
That's pretty much what they say.
Okay.
And, again, because there's so little to do, they've done it all for you.
Yep.
It's very easy to have grade A honey. But then there are these varietals, and there's hundreds of different kinds based on what they've foraged and when the honey has come in and things like that. And did you have a question around this as to how you have, like, how is it just clover?
Yes. How is it? And how is it just from this particular flower or that kind of thing? How do you segregate?
Right. Well, that isn't something that you do. Oh, okay.
Fast.
That isn't something you do. That has to do with the way that honeybees work. They'll go in a 2-mile radius around the hive. They can go up to 5 miles, but 2 miles is their preference. And if you know something that they love blooms, you know, like for instance, Tupelo honey down in the Florida, Georgia swamp area, they know they love Tupelo. So when the Tupelo blooms for those 2 weeks, they know they're going to. I mean, there might be a little bit of danger, you know, whatever else is down. I don't know what's down there. But they can tell it's, and then they look at the color and things like that, and it's, but they got to pull that as soon as the season is done, or it'll start mixing with other things.
So. Isn't that so interesting?
And there's lots you can do to help bees. So that's always what I like to say.
Well,
at the
let's leave
end.
A tip for people. What can we do?
Don't
to help
use
bees?
Pesticides in your garden. And if you can buy organic, thus supporting agriculture that doesn't kill bees, because pesticides are insecticides and bees are insects. So this is one thing where the research is showing that that's a big problem with the bees right now.
All right. We're going to have you back.
Absolutely.
I think that was very interesting. Well, you're listening to Food for Thought. Another week done. And thank you, Jeannie.
Yes, thank you.
And we will be back next week. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you
very
for having
much.
Me.
Thank
this
you
was
so
a lot
much.
Of fun.
It was very good.
Yeah.